From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
In Trinidad, at odds with the Prime Minister, a defiant President Arthur Robinson cites preservation of the state for his stand. Layered pilots won't go on strike after successful mediation talks, and why Anguillan elections will be 1 week earlier. I'm Ken Richards, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The Attorney General of Trinidad and Tobago has informed the country's head of state that he has no say in the removal and appointment of government senators. Ramesh Lawrence Maraj made the statement in the Senate today as the impasse between the Prime Minister and the President continues. 1 week ago, Prime Minister Basdeo Pandey advised the President to revoke the appointments of two Tobago senators and appoint two others. But President Arthur Robinson has responded, telling Mr. Pandey that removing the two senators has far-reaching consequences for the Twin Islands state of Trinidad and Tobago. Tony Fraser reports.
It was expected that today's sitting of the Senate would reveal whether or not President Robinson had complied with the request of the Prime Minister. When the two Tobago senators appeared, it was clear that the President had not budged. Attorney General Maraj took to the floor and read his statement as the legal advisor to the government. Putting the attempts to fire the senators in perspective, the Attorney General said a government cannot conduct its business unless senators, approved by the Prime Minister, support government legislation. He pointed out that the Prime Minister has his quota of senators, so too does the Leader of the Opposition, and he noted that the President has the right to appoint his own choices. But, said Mr. Maraj, the President cannot go beyond his quota and cannot seek to influence the choices of either the Leader of the Opposition nor the Prime Minister.
Mr. President, it is an accepted convention of the Constitution that if a senator votes against a measure put forward by the party responsible for his appointment, the member should resign or expect to be replaced. This is precisely why two honorable government senators who voted against the government are being replaced. A government majority in the Senate is dependent on the votes of all of the senators appointed on the advice of the Prime Minister. Any delay by a President of the Republic in responding to the advice of a Prime Minister in these circumstances will jeopardize a government's ability to function as the country's legitimate executive.
President Robinson had also charged that the Prime Minister had not been informing him of government's operations, and therefore he was not in a position to advise, counsel, and even warn the Prime Minister. Mr. Maraj told the House that the Prime Minister has subsequently heard the advice, counsel and warnings of the President and thanks him for it. Prime Minister Pandey says he will attempt to meet with the President on Thursday and another sitting of the Senate is scheduled for the same day. Tony Fraser in Port of Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
Meanwhile, President Robinson was explaining today that it was the Prime Minister who first went public with the issue. He says Prime Minister Pandey also gave the public the impression that the matter had been settled. But as President Robinson overstepped his authority by refusing to heed the Prime Minister's advice to revoke the appointment of the two Tobago senators, I asked Mr. Robinson why he did not stick with the constitutional provisions and comply with the wishes of the Prime Minister.
Well, there are circumstances surrounding a decision. And that is why the Constitution also requires that the President be given an opportunity to advise and, if necessary, to warn. And in this case, as I pointed out, it is a matter involving the relations between Tobago and Trinidad. And, of course, we know of what has happened throughout the Caribbean, between the islands of the Caribbean. And what I have been seeking to point out is that the relations between the two islands is a matter of the integrity of the state.
But while you may be doing this in your role as president, it may be perceived that you're also doing this because you come from a political background which helped you put the government together. Is that the case?
That may be part of it, in that the two senators happen to be there as part of the foundation agreement that was arrived at. But it is a fact that two senators from Tobago are there, and they are there in order to represent the interests of Tobago. If they see any considerable destruction arising to Tobago from matters for which decisions are being taken, it is their duty to refrain or oppose such decisions.
Can you say you're looking at the issue purely from a presidential perspective?
I would say yes. Of course, I have the background knowledge of the relationship between the two islands. And I know the dangers of adopting courses which appear to be suppressing the interests of one island at the expense of the other. There have to be protective arrangements for the smaller island.
But Mr. Robinson, given your background and given the NAR relationship with the UNC and what has happened in the past, couldn't it be said that you have a conflict of interest in all of this?
I would say it is a national interest, in the interest of preserving the state. The preservation of the state is a presidential interest.
President Arthur Robinson, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Mediation talks in Antigua appear to have been successful in averting a strike threatened by the pilots of regional airline LIAT. They had indicated on Monday that they would undertake industrial action if LIAT failed to meet their salary demands. But Antiguan Labor Commissioner Austin Josiah told me in between meetings today that mediation efforts have so far resulted in the parties concerned reaching agreement on certain key issues.
So far, we have been able to keep the airline flying and at the same time get a commitment that the workers will be paid.
But do you get a sense that the pilots are amenable to an amicable solution?
The basic problem has been one of poor communication between the parties. And I believe now that LIAT has seen the importance of including the pilots in deliberations and what have you, and a committee has been set up to ensure that all meetings have a tripartite input.
But how does LIAT intend to move in an expeditious manner to ensure that that situation is resolved rather than escalate?
From what I know, LIAT has been planning to ensure that there is a smooth movement in the payment of salaries and so on continuously, but some things have just been, as you would say, unplanned, in the sense that creditors are now on the back of the company. Much of the news reports and so on that have gone out have basically frightened some of the creditors. But we all are aware that the company has the background, has the potential of being a very vibrant company. It's the safest airline in the region.
But can you say categorically that the strike has been averted?
At least I would think that it has been averted at least up to the 31st of the month, but I see it being averted for at least another month or so.
But does that mean that LIAT workers are going to get their January salaries on time?
The point is that we now have an agreement that all salaries will be paid on the 31st of January. And I would think that the workers can live with that. And as a result of that, things will go smoothly as from here on.
Antigua's Labor Commissioner Austin Josiah. St. Lucia's Minister of Public Utilities, Calix Judge, has given a grudging welcome to plans by the phone giant Cable & Wireless to reduce the cost of telephone calls for Dominicans and St. Lucians. The price of calls have been cut by more than half, but St. Lucians will have to wait another month for this to take effect. St. Lucia's Calix Judge, who led the sub-regional delegation to talks with the UK-based company, said they were finally listening to regional complaints about their phone service after being deaf for a long time.
The guys in London, and I'm putting the challenge to them directly, need to come down and talk to us directly so that they can hear us loud and clear. The structure of the company is such that I think that those in the Caribbean are beginning to change and are understanding our position, but I still think that the guys in London are still deaf. The rate structure announced by Cable & Wireless, therefore, is a step in the right direction, and it suggests that Cable & Wireless is moving from a position of intransigence to a more collaborative and partnership type of arrangement.
Calix Judge, Cable & Wireless is introducing a flat rate rather than charges per minute. A court in the Bahamas has been hearing graphic, sometimes gory evidence in the case of the murder and rape of a British tourist. 19-year-old Tennell McIntosh is the accused in a case that has attracted international interest. Giving evidence today was the pathologist who performed the autopsy on the victim, Joan Clark. Debbie Nash was in court.
For 2 hours, Dr. Cyril Wecht gave graphic and meticulous detail into the injuries he had detected on Miss Clark during the post-mortem examination. The pathologist noted two blunt force head injuries caused by an instrument, most likely a rock. The bruises and scratches on her neck were typical of those used for manual strangulation. Internal and external bruises reveal sexual assault of a forcible nature. Three thermal or burn injuries on one of her legs were attributed to cigarette burns. Today, as yesterday, the young man sat silent in the prisoner's dock, occasionally making simple sketches on the notepad his attorney slipped to him through the bars. He made little reaction to the evidence presented by the police crime scene specialist, who began yesterday and continued testimony today. This is Debbie Nash in Nassau reporting for BBC Caribbean Report.
Caribbean countries are pushing for a United Nations initiative to help them regulate and improve their own offshore banking services. The UN Forum offers Caribbean countries help to set up their regulations. It comes at a time when richer states within the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development have threatened a blacklist for any countries not falling in line with their recommendations on offshore banking. The OECD report gives other nations until 2005 to change various parts of their businesses, including ending tax breaks to encourage business. The chairman of a new regional financial action task force, Robert Matavias, told a meeting of the grouping in Trinidad that the Caribbean would be better off with a UN initiative.
The UN initiative, therefore, agrees that reputable financial centers should adhere to certain benchmark agreed standards of regulatory practices, etc. And all of these acceptable to all the offshore centers. As a matter of fact, the offshore centers has been involved in developing these benchmarks. Very often the offshore centers are not credited for developing regulatory standards, practices, sometimes in advance.
Chairman of the Caribbean Financial Action Task Force, Robert Matavias. The task force, funded by the European Union, includes representatives from 22 Caribbean countries, the United States and Britain. One part of the regional monitoring process is the money laundering unit within the task force. That program's manager is Brian Reynolds. He says countries need help monitoring, but are capable of introducing their own guidelines to keep out money laundering.
If you look across the region, you'll see that Trinidad is one of the most advanced countries with what its legislation represents and what it's actually done about it. We look worldwide all the time what is developing and, as I've said before, emerging trends and advising governments on what sort of things they should be looking at. So reporting procedures in banks, they're good for the banks because they protect the bank's reputation. They remove from that the risk that they might be exposed to things through lack of regulation or lack of monitoring. And at the same time, they're keeping the country abreast of developments. And if there are unhealthy trends, there's ways of dealing with that, of course.
Brian Reynolds. Parties contesting elections in Anguilla will have to move forward their preparations by a week. That's because the Queen's second son, Prince Andrew, is due to visit Britain's overseas territories at about the same time. The Duke of York's visit to the territories was due to start one day after the original election date in Anguilla. Orrin Gordon reports.
The timing of the visit so close to Anguilla's elections would have been awkward for the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, so a new date was set for March 3rd, a week earlier than the one set by the Chief Minister Hubert Hughes. His relations with London are poor. He said he's calling the elections in the first place because the British government wants him out. What is known is that he was told he could not continue with a minority administration, which was caused by the resignation of his former Finance Minister Victor Banks. The journalist Wycliffe Richardson explains who decided on the change.
The governor and he consulted the chief minister, who had some difficulty in the change, but in the end the chief minister said, well, so be it. If he wants it for the third, then so be it.
That will hardly improve Mr. Hughes's mood. His outspoken, some say abrasive style is not to the liking of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. The current minister, Baroness Scotland, the former one, Baroness Simons, and the governor, Robert Harris, have all felt the force of it. And of the campaign itself, Mr. Hughes is definitely pushing a message of independence for the 35 square mile island with a population of 10,000. More than 7,500 will go to the polls earlier than Mr. Hughes would have liked.
Orrin Garden. And before we go a look at our top stories, a defiant President Arthur Robinson cites preservation of the state for his stand against the decision by Prime Minister Basdeo Pandey and Liat Pilot's wound on strike after successful mediation talks. That's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Join us from 11:05 GMT for our next morning programs tomorrow. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.